Time now to go to Sunday school with the professor. Giants third base coach Ron Wotus with Marty Lawrence.
I didn't know you wanted to get involved with the discussion, Mr. Helper.
On your home of Giants baseball.
Doesn't like the way you think.
KNBR 680, the sports leader. Brought to you by River Island, one of the country's top-selling master plan communities just across the Altamont in Lathrop. Where else can you live on a lake, next door to a park, or walking distance to your kids' new school? With 10 new neighborhoods, River Islands is the one place you can't afford to miss.
All right. Well, good morning. Happy All-Star break to you.
Thanks, Marty. Yeah, one more game, and we get a chance to rest up for 4 days. I know everybody looks forward to it, not the fans, but I know you will as well, the rest of that voice. I mean, come on. You were here till midnight last night, and you're back on this morning, so it'll be a nice break.
What's the best thing you ever did over the break? And now I know you've been to All-Star Games, which, thank goodness, that means you won a pennant
right
beforehand. But what's the best vacation you ever had over an All-Star break?
Well, you know, we keep it simple. We would do the same thing a lot. We had a place up at Donner Lake. We still go up to Donner quite a bit. We're not going this year. We're going up to Napa for a couple days, seeing how we have to fly on Thursday. And we have 3 nights, but we got to be back on Wednesday to catch the flight on Thursday morning, keeping it simple. But that's the thing we like to do, because we used to have a vacation home up at Tahoe Donner, and it's beautiful in the summer. It's not not a lot of crowds. It's quiet. It's just the reverse of what you get working every day and being in the big cities. You're up in the mountains. So I really enjoy just to relax and spend some time with family.
Yeah, that clean mountain air.
Oh, you can't
beat it. There's something to it, right?
It really is. It really is. The other time we'd go is, the end of the season, October, if we're not in the playoffs. It's another wonderful time to go up to the mountains and relax.
So Will Smith goes to Cleveland. The one All-Star goes to Cleveland as an engaged man. How about that? He's getting married, and he put on Instagram the other day. So John Miller was talking to Bochy on the Bochy show yesterday. Said, Boch, what would you get him as a gift, a wedding gift? And he couldn't come up with anything. He said, what's your go-to wedding gift?
Right.
So I'm going to ask you, what's your go-to wedding gift?
Oh, shoot, you're going to put me on the spot now.
Come on, you got to come up with something.
Well,
candlesticks.
The candlesticks, yeah. That's a tough one. How about an All-Star game? Huh? You go to Cleveland, the rock and roll capital of the world. Go-to wedding gift. You know, Lori's the one that really handles the wedding gifts and does a tremendous job. So we'll have her on next time.
All
and
right.
We'll ask her that question.
Nice color TV, maybe?
A color TV?
Right.
Not a black and white,
right.
That's for sure. It would be definitely color. You know, I didn't know that Will was even got engaged.
He did. He put it on Instagram.
He put it on Instagram. Wow. Yeah. You know, he's right there in the clubhouse, and you'd think I would know these things.
Butch didn't know either.
No?
Nobody knew. I guess Melanson knew. He said, Melanta said, you had to ask her 5 times. That was,
exactly.
Humor, you know?
Well, I'm happy for him because what a great guy, great teammate,
isn't
and
it?
To come back from his surgery the way he has and the year he's putting together. So I'm sure it's a great time in his life, and he should look forward to the All-Star game and the engagement, and he's on a roll. So
yeah.
I'm happy for him.
Well, look at a year. Come on,
yes.
He came back last May, and, you know, he was ready to go. Kind of. And, you know, let's talk about closers a little bit. You've been around so many closers. We go back to Don Stanhouse, the full pack.
Oh, yeah.
With Earl Weaver. But he doesn't have that overpowering stuff. But he has deception, and he gets his swings and misses.
Yeah, and it's tougher to close like that because most closers do have dominant stuff where you can make mistakes in the zone, and the hitters don't square you up because of high velocity or a nasty breaking ball like Rob Nen used to have, Brian Wilson. He had stuff, but he also could locate. You know, he'd throw to both sides of the plate, and he'd hit that corner. But Will Smith, it is just amazing the success that he has had because, you know, you gotta give him a lot of credit for knowing how to pitch. He's got great breaking stuff, but he keeps the hitters off balance. He's got a great feel for what he's doing. And, he's got to hit his spots, too, because he doesn't have overpowering stuff. But he has good stuff, and he has multiple pitches that he can throw for a strike, and he puts them in a perfect location.
Yeah, he does. He's riding it right now.
Yeah.
Good for Will Smith. Last night, of course, doing the show last night, the big news – as I said, kind of the beauty of baseball, you never know what's going to happen. And, you know, we've done this show so many times, you and I. But Bumgarner gets hit on the arm last night, and I said on the air, what was your first thought? What was your first thought when that happened?
Well, I think it's the same as everybody else. You know, you don't want to see the guy injured. Regardless of what's going to happen, there's a lot of trade talk, obviously, with him. And, you know, you have to be aware of that. You know, I mean, he's in a situation and we're in a situation where he could be gone and he could bring a lot to the table for this organization going forward. So everybody thinks of that. Nobody wants to see him get hurt. And then just the individual. You know, I knew he was going to stay in that game. Where he got hit, it wasn't in a good spot. But you know, bum who's bum, that he's going to want to stay in that game. And he did for as long as he could. And, but those are the thoughts that go through your head. But you don't want to see the player be injured or have him do something where it's going to affect, his ability the rest of the season and possibly for the near future here.
Yeah. Well, look, he could have gotten hit on the elbow and that could have been very dramatic. So as fans, you're happy for the things that did happen in the way they did.
Yeah, no doubt. And he didn't get hit in a good spot. It's just above the elbow, right on the tendon.
Right.
And when that stiffens up, I mean, it's hard to move your arm around a little bit. And I'm sure it was not feeling great, but you know, bum being bum. Is going to do his job, and you got to pull him off the mound. He's not going to walk off.
No, it's great. You know, I thought of Bob Gibson, who pitched with a broken leg. Come on, he pitched like six innings with a broken leg in 1967,
really?
And of course came back for the World Series, and the Red Sox won that. The Cardinals won that World Series. The Cardinals are here today.
Right.
The Cardinals won that World Series over a team you probably liked, the Red Sox, way back when. But it reminded me of Gibson a little bit, the way he came back out there. And also, I think his stock goes up in a way. Not that he needed reaffirmation of the kind of guy he is, but if that's the kind of guy in a playoff, I want that guy.
Right.
And that's the big thing. They could fool around with all the fly ball rates, hard hit ball rates, and all the stuff we talk about. I want that guy on the mound when it matters.
No doubt. I mean, it makes everybody better around you, and that's a sign of a great player is when he elevates everybody's game. I mean, his competitiveness and his desire to do his job, that doesn't go unnoticed by everybody else. You want a tough guy. You know, there's a lot of guys today, you know, they get a hangnail, and, you know, they want to be 100%. They want to, you know, take some time off and get better. And, you know, it's an old school mentality. And, you know, some of it's been created by us, the organizations, with, you know, how much money these guys make. And we want to keep people on the field and we don't want to risk injury. So, you know, a lot of it isn't the players doing. And we've talked about that before. But you want that mentality. You know, that's the way we were brought up in the game. It's your job. You know, you know, hold your job down, do your job, and don't let anybody else, you know, don't take a day off because somebody else could take your job.
Wally Pipp.
Yeah, we talked about that before as well. Exactly. So his mentality is part
Pretty
of
good.
Who he is and part of the reason he's such a good competitor and pitcher.
Yeah, I thought we saw it last night, so good for him. Hopefully everything's okay and he'll pitch in Milwaukee on Saturday. You ever get hit hard like that? I mean, you know, you played ball for so many years. What happened to you?
Well, you know, I've been hit with pitches, you know, guys throwing in the mid-90s, and I don't know why they picked on me. I didn't hit the home run. The guy before me hit the home run, or the two guys before me hit the home run. Then you come up, this little guy, and they hit you in the ribs. But, you know, that was just that was commonplace years ago. Hit with pitches, I think that the worst shot I took was in the jaw, a left-hander.
Really?
Yeah, cutter. It was kind of the sun, twilight. I couldn't see very good. Guy threw a cutter up and in, and it hit me straight in the jaw, and I had some stitches there. And then, you know, the other time that I got hit, it's a little embarrassing, but I'll share it with you. It was the first two games of the season. We were in AAA, and I can't remember his first name, but Patterson, a left-handed pitcher, hit another cutter. Guys with cutters, see, it's a hard pitch to hit.
It is.
He threw the cutter, and I had to go down to the bullpen in Hawaii to warm up the pitcher because we had to get two guys going, and I wasn't playing. I was a utility guy at that point in the season. So I go down there, and I got my first baseman's glove that I'm breaking, and I have no shin guards, no mask. I look over for the right-hander throwing to our catcher. He's in full gear. And I'm going, what am I doing? Anyways, Patterson throws me a cutter. You know, I missed it. Hit me right in the ear. I turned my head, hit me right in the ear. I had to go get stitches after the game that day as well. So wasn't very smart. I never went down there without a mask after that.
Right. So, well, you must got hit at second base and short coming in.
Yeah, absolutely.
You got up, in those days, you know, the old Hal McRae, they'll knock you into left field.
No doubt. And you knew the guys that were coming in hard. I mean, you mentioned Hal McRae. Bobby Brown was a guy that always came in hard. Pete Rose came in hard. I mean, he elbowed me off of base one day at third base.
Really?
He, you know, it was a base hit and to left. And I went to cover third. The throw came home. He made a big turn, and he came back to third base as the third baseman cut it like he was going to throw it to me. He stepped on the base and elbowed me and knocked me off the base. He didn't have to do that, but that's the way guys played. But second base was a place that you got upended and you got hit because we were taught, turn the double play first.
Yeah.
You don't try to get out of the way because you have to turn the double play. And if you get the ball in and out of your hand quick enough, you can turn it, and then you fall over the runner. You let him hit you, and you just fall instead of trying to avoid him. But there's sometimes it's impossible to get rid of the ball before you're going to get hit, and that's when you get smoked if you turn the double play. And I've been upended many, many times at second base.
Yeah, we don't see it anymore.
Nope, it's not part of the game.
No,
and we were talking about that yesterday with Joe Panic, and we were working on double plays, and Sean Dunstan, and we were talking about how much the game has changed, the art of getting out of the way of the runner, whether you go across the bag, whether you go back. Now they can stand there right at the bag and turn the double play and don't worry about getting hit.
Boy, you know, it's funny you bring up the double plays. Made me think about it. Turning the double play now with the shift is very interesting.
Yeah.
It's the guy's coming across the bag. The third baseman is coming across the bag to take the throw.
Yeah, it puts a lot of players in uncomfortable positions. And one uncomfortable position is the second baseman alone. And this has been going on for 100 years when it's a big pull left-handed hitter up and a man on first. Okay, do you want the second baseman standing up the middle where the batter's not going to hit the ball, or do you want to pull him all the way over towards first base where he's going to hit the ball? Because if he stays up the middle and he hits that ball, it's in the right field and you got first and third. Now, if he goes way over, okay, he's not in position to get to second base when the ball is hit to the shortstop.
Right.
If it's hit to the third, we got the shortstop takes the throw.
Okay.
But if it's hit to the shortstop, he can't get to the base in time. So you're only getting one out, and you're seeing a lot of that with the shifts, and everybody's up in arms. What are we doing? You got to play for a double play. Well, if you know the guy's going to – you got to play where the guy's going to hit the ball, because it's not like the eighth or ninth inning where it's, if you don't turn the double play, it's the winning run.
Sure.
You know, you don't want another hit. You don't want these first and thirds. So we see a lot of that. And it's a different way to view the game because it wasn't like that years ago. Well, when it was a double play situation, shortstop, second baseman were up the middle.
Right.
The pitcher would try to induce ground balls that would be hit there. They would pitch a particular way. But those days are long gone. I mean, the pitch plans are different. Everything is different about the game in that regard.
Yeah, the broadcaster used to say the infielder's in double play depth.
Yes.
That was the phrase, double play. I'm sure if John is listening or Dwayne, double play depth is where you'd be pinching just so you could turn the double play.
Yeah, you're in and you're over a little bit so you can get to second base.
Boy, those days are done. Hey, talking about getting hit, the professor with us this morning, how about Pilar the other night in San Diego? Calling timeout, and they didn't get timeout, and Perdomo threw the ball. How about that?
That was
the last time you saw that thing.
Yeah, no, you know, I haven't. I mean, especially with the pitcher lobbing the ball in the way he did, and it just clipped his foot, I guess, or his leg.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've ever seen that. And, you know, you just got to go with the pitch until you know there's timeout. So, and that started the rally. I think there was two outs at the time. So, big play for us.
You know, the other thing we're seeing this week, fly balls to the outfield now have become an adventure all of a sudden, where guys are losing. I mean, it's dusk or twilight.
Yeah.
I mean, it isn't like we're in Arizona in the middle of, you know, Scottsdale with
right.
that high sky. What's going on with the balls in the outfield?
Well, it's always been that. Around twilight, before the lights take effect and before it gets, you know, real dark, you have a hard time seeing. You get that. It's not the high sky that you get in Arizona with the bright blue and you can't see it, but it's twilight and you lose the ball. And this has gone on as long as the game's been played, but you don't see guys missing them as much. So there was a time when Felipe was here, and we still do it, around the same time every night when he gets to that dusk. He would whistle out and point up in the sky. So when you see the infielders doing that around twilight, they're telling the outfielders that I will help point the ball out when it's hit up in the air. And we tell our infielders, when that ball's up at that twilight time, you got to run out and help point where the ball is, because it's very easy to lose sight of the ball. I'm sure it happens to a fan sometimes at twilight where the ball's hit, and maybe you look away and you look up again and you can't find it.
Happens all the time.
Yeah, a lot.
All the time. It was interesting on this one because Fowler was kind of there, the center fielder, and O'Neill's a left fielder, you know, big kid, strong kid, and it was the old, if you're the center fielder, take everything. But we didn't see that. That's another, is that gone from baseball?
Well, I think what happened there, in watching O'Neill, you could tell he was in trouble, but he didn't throw his arms up like, I don't see it. You know, usually a guy's supposed to throw his arms up and shake his, I don't see the ball. Now the center fielder can come over. It looked as if he had the ball in his sights, because he went over to where the ball was.
Yeah.
It almost hit him in the head. It was so darn close. And then at the last minute, I think O'Neill may have yelled something, and he kind of looked away.
Yeah.
But I think O'Neill expected him to catch the ball, and he did. And he didn't alert people that he lost it. Maybe he lost it after he got over there, and he looked back up, and he couldn't find it.
We're seeing more of it. Whatever it is, we're seeing more for some reason. And again, it goes back to fundamentals. Of playing the game with good fundamentals so you don't get in a position like that.
Maybe
we're seeing more of it.
Maybe a fluorescent ball, Marty? What do you think?
Charlie Finley did. You know, that
did
was
he really?
Yeah, Orange Alert. That's what he called it.
Really?
They used it in spring training. Remember Squeaky Parker?
Oh, yeah.
Squeaky Parker was a scout for the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Wow.
And I did a show with him about that baseball. Carmen's laughing because, you know, I'm going back in time here. But Squeaky Parker told me the story that they called it Orange Alert Baseballs, and Finley tried it in spring training.
No kidding. Yeah, I remember Squeaky. He was with the Pirates when I was over there. Yeah, he was a scout. Yeah, scout, and very good scout, and he was involved with a lot of decisions over there. I never realized that they used a different color baseball.
And they tried it in spring training.
Okay.
Yeah, just for that reason, to see what could happen. Boy, interesting. There were a couple of plays on my mind this week that I want to talk to you about. One was Dickerson last night.
Mm-hmm.
And, I thought he was going. You know, he hit the ball in the gap. And Martinez, look, you know, he's not the fleetest right fielder. And that ball, once it shot the gap, you know, Dickerson was flying. And I said, is Woe going to send him? And what happened when he got to, because he ended up with a triple.
Well, I'd love to send him. Look, you know, you wait all year for a chance to send somebody.
Have you sent anybody yet?
No, and inside the Parker, no,
go
I
ahead.
Have not.
Okay.
And if I would have sent him, we still wouldn't have an inside the Parker. So he would have been dead as a doornail at home plate. So, you know, you got to use judge. I know everybody wants to see it. Look, I want to see it happen, but he had no chance to score on that ball. The ball was into the relay man before he even touched third. So, you know, we had to hold him up and be prudent in that situation.
He was laughing. You said something to him. I mean,
I went to give him a handshake, and I went to give him a shake. He went to give me the knuckles, and then I went to the knuckles. He went to the shake, and we fell all over each other. I said, we got to get this down. What are you going to do here? And then I asked him. I says, you know, you've been hitting a lot of home runs. What do you want for your home run thing? You know, they do the bash. Everybody does something. He goes, a good old-fashioned high five.
Okay.
And I said, very good. I can handle that.
He's sort of an old-school player, isn't he?
Yeah, you know, he loves to play.
Doesn't he?
And, you know, I think he really appreciates being back on the field after all the injuries that he's had. And, you know, hey, I'm sure he wants to be successful and make some money in this game. He's had a tough road with injuries, and he gives it everything he can. He's working hard on his defense. He shows up every day, and he's certainly swinging the bat well.
Well, I had him on the show last week, and I maybe mentioned it to you. His father was a Top Gun pilot. And, of course, the movie today is Top Gun.
Is it really?
Yeah, after the game today, they're showing the movie Top Gun. His father was a Top Gun pilot.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, his grandfather fought in the Battle of the Midway. He was a jet fighter in World War II as well.
Wow.
So this kid comes from, like, you know, there's
blue
something
collar.
To him.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, and we saw his dad in San Diego. Seemed like a nice man. I know some people spoke to him. Yeah, that's great. Good for him.
Good story. One other one before we take the break is Slater. Look, you've seen Slater for many years. Do you see something different with him now? Because, as I said on the show last night, fly ball rate for pitchers, fly ball rate for hitters. If you hit the ball in the air, things can happen. And he got the ball in the air.
Yeah. Well, you know, that was something that they wanted him to do out of spring training. He smothered a lot of balls in the past, hit a lot of ground balls. So they were trying to get him, you know, his launch angle to be a little bit better. You know, how much that's contributing, I don't know. I'd have to look at a side-by-side with his swing. One thing he has always done well is hit the ball the right field.
Yes, he has.
And, you know, I mean, there's something to be said for that. And, you know, I always believed and saw it in the minor leagues, developing players and watching players develop. The last thing you usually develop is pull power, learning how to pull the ball and hit it out of the park. You know, if you got a player that can use the whole field, I think you got a chance to be a really good hitter like him. You know, a lot of guys come up, they got a one-way swing. All they can do is pull the ball. But when the ball's away or that's they can't hit it, he has the ability to do that, and I think the longer he plays and the more he matures, he's going to get better and better on taking that pitch on the inside corner and pulling it. Now, he's got that inside-out swing, right? That's what he did last night. That ball was middle in, and he got inside it and drove it out to right field. So he's getting better. He's been swinging the bat good for us, obviously, and has given us a shot in the arm, him, Dickerson.
Pilar.
And all of a sudden, you know, we're scoring runs, and we feel like, you know, we can make some moves in the game. We match up a little bit better, and it's been real good.
Yeah, and, you know, the other thing is that with the Super Balls being used now.
Exactly.
You know, and they really, look, we know it. Minnesota's going to hit 320 home runs.
Wow.
I mean, it's crazy, the numbers. It really is.
It is.
But this 309 down the right field line, it's not so far away. And if you get right-handed hitters who can pop them up in the air, they're gone. Now, you're going to see more of them. We see it all the time now.
Yeah, I mean, it's reachable because of the ball, like you said. But, you know, it's going to be a hard guy to look for. I mean, obviously, a guy that drives the ball out the other day. But you know, big, strong guys that can hit the ball where it's pitched, they can reach it down the right field line, even though it's not an area that a lot of right-handers hit the ball.
We're seeing more of it. All right, so he hits a grand slam. Big deal. A lot of pinch hit home runs for you guys. I think you lead the major leagues with pinch hit home runs. Sandoval is the second leading pinch hitter in baseball. And I looked it up today. I want to say Matt Joyce, but I think someone, I forget who's number one, but he's number two. But the first slam pinch hit since Rich Aurelia. Do you remember that one? And Russ Davis was the last one here in San Francisco.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Russ
Davis was 2000, Aurelia was 2003.
You know, I should remember, but Richie hit so many home runs for us back then.
How about Richie?
He had 31 year.
Talk about him.
You know what? I saw him in Tulsa when it was that strike-shortened season when I was managing in Shreveport. And remember, you know, Bob Lewis and the Major League staff came around because they were on strike. And they were going to trade it. What was it, Burkett that we traded? Anyways, we got, you know, they wanted to know who we liked on
Texas.
Tulsa. And actually, the Major League staff got to see Richie play. And he was on my list because when I first saw him play in Double-A, he had great hands, an accurate arm, and he took a hack. And I called him Babe Aurelia back then. He'd swing and fall over. He swung so hard. And that was in Double-A. So the talent was there. and he made himself into an outstanding baseball player. I mean, when he first came up, I remember, you know, I was up maybe the second year he was in the big leagues. I had him in AAA, but in 98, this guy was as sure-handed as any shortstop we had.
Really?
He really was. You know, if he got to the ball, it was in his glove, and you were out. And like I said, he's had a great career for the Giants, and he developed a lot of power later on. Even though he took that hack, he had some really good years with the bat and developed that power later on.
A Brooklyn kid like Sean Dunstan.
Yes, two shortstops.
How about that? Two very much alike, aren't they? When you think about opinions and the kind of guys they are.
In a lot of ways they are. Yeah, right? Absolutely. Yeah.
Sean Dunstan is terrific.
Yeah, he is.
I must tell you, I enjoyed talking to him all the time.
Well, everybody does. You know, Sean brings such a good positive vibe to the team. He's like a teammate still to these guys, and he loves talking sports and banter and, you know, telling guys the way it used to be. And guys love talking to him. He has so many stories and so many good things to offer. A thing that I really love about Sean, too, is the way he played the game.
Yeah.
You know, you think of Pete Rose, you know, Pete Hussle running around. But Sean ran harder than anybody every time the ball was hit.
Yeah.
He ran the way you're supposed to run. And I have a lot of respect for that.
Yeah, in fact, we got into it the other day, and he's always coming up with baseball stories or questions, right? Sports questions?
Yeah.
He said if Pete Rose played today, he'd be no good because his OPS was 720 or 730. And I said he'd be no good.
Yeah.
You know.
He does like to ask the tough questions.
You know?
You know, he'd be a great guy to have on the show.
Wouldn't he?
Yeah, we got to get Sean on.
I've invited him. Carmen says no. Oh, yeah, Carl.
No, he likes talking.
He
don't let him fool
you. On the air. He doesn't like talking on the air.
I get that. Sean, if you're listening, come on in.
Yeah, we want him on the show. Before we take our break, and we're going to ask you about the Home Run Derby and who your pick is for the Home Run Derby and whether you watch it or not. The other one who hit the home run was Russ Davis. Remember Russ Davis?
Sure, I remember Russ
Davis. Came over, I think, from Toronto, and it just never worked out for him. Didn't he get hurt? Something happened?
Well, the thing that really stands out about Russ, he had some bat potential. He wasn't a bad hitter.
Good hit.
But he was the worst guy I've ever seen on an infield pop-up. I don't know if you remember, Russ. I'm sorry if you're listening out there. But he couldn't catch an infield pop-up. And it was the strangest thing. He was a good enough fielder, played third, played first, but that ball went up in the air. He had a difficult time with it.
Russ Davis. Good hitter. He was a Yankee.
Very
came
good
up,
hitter.
Right? Came up
I think we
Yankees.
Got him from the Yankees, actually.
Was it Yankees?
Or maybe Seattle. Maybe he was gone at that point. Yeah, he came up with the Yankees and was a good player. And, we took a shot at him. And, you know, he did okay, but not what we were hoping.
One last one that the situations that came up. Belt. The other day, his bases loaded, fly ball to left field. He almost got back picked. Where was he going?
Well, no, you know what? You can blame me for that one too.
Okay.
You know when the ball is close, in the outfield, or you don't have a chance to score, you can stand there or you can draw a throw. You know, meaning start like you're going to go, and you know we didn't know this guy's arm. We heard he had a good arm. See if he airmails it. You know what I mean? If he fires one to home, well. The guy, to his credit, he fired it to third base, and it's probably a bad area. We won't do that again when he's right on the third baseline to draw a throw because the third baseman is very, very close to the bag.
Yeah.
So as soon as he made that throw, I started screaming back, and thank goodness he heard me. But I wanted him to draw a throw, and the guy threw it right to third. I don't know if it was by design or not, but he was almost out, so we dodged a bullet there.
Oh, very good baseball. Yeah. All right, good baseball. You want to draw the throw, see if he's going to airmail it to the plate.
Yeah.
And he threw to third instead.
Exactly, yeah.
And Belt had the size 15 feet. Thank goodness, because I'm telling you, that was very close.
It was too close for comfort, no,
okay.
No doubt about it.
Very good. All right, I'm glad you straightened that out. All right, the professor is here. It is Sunday morning. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about Mad Magazine, which is expiring, and also Carmen shaking her head as usual, and also the Home Run Derby. This is what we do on Sunday morning. That's what we do. All right, more coming up with the professor right after this. The professor is with us. It is Sunday morning. Well, Mad Magazine, and if you don't know what it is, Google it, but it's coming to an end. But maybe our first satirical magazine, and as kids, I don't know. I couldn't wait to see Mad Magazine. Did you ever see it as a kid?
Absolutely. It was the first thing that was different, right? Yeah. And everybody gravitated towards that magazine. I mean, just a goofy guy in the cover. What's his name?
Alfred E. Newman.
Alfred E. Newman with the freckles and the look. And there was nothing like it. So, no, I remember Mad Magazine. Very prevalent when I was growing up. And not that I read it. Much, you know, but I remember seeing it all over the place.
Took on everything. Your parents, it took on schools, teachers, you name it, and with the great satire. Really was fun.
And it's coming to an end.
I think so, yeah. Enough, I just saw, I've seen that on the internet. So okay. People are putting some panels of old cartoons up there. So it's kind of fun to look at it. One thing I was thinking about, next week you're going to Milwaukee. And do you ever walk through that tailgate over there, you know, with the bratwurst and all that stuff?
I probably should. That's not a bad idea. But we have brats in the clubhouse, and I can't drink a beer before the game. So I just stay on the field. But I do a lot of walking around the city, but not through the parking lot. You're right. They're probably one of the best tailgate cities in the country, especially in the summer. Well known. Yeah. Well, you have the Miller beer plant right across the street. And they love their brats, and they love a good barbecue out there, tailgate. So, yeah. No, I have never walked through the parking lot. You know, we're always in the park by then. So.
Yeah. Harvey Keene. Remember Harvey Keene?
Mm-hmm.
Harvey Keene, Harvey's Wallbangers, you know, the big hitters in the late 70s. And then George Bamberger. I don't know if you remember George Bamberger.
I remember the name, sure.
Yeah, he was the pitching coach for the Orioles and the Mets, became the manager as well. But they used to hang out.
Really?
Before the game. Come on, really? They would be out there. And Dwayne will tell you the stories, I'm sure.
Wow.
They used to hang out before the game.
Wow. Well, the game has changed quite a bit. I Boach would probably like doing that, hanging out with those guys. Who wouldn't like to hang out there?
Come on. I think it's one of the great parts of baseball.
Yeah.
It really is Milwaukee. So I was going to ask you this, you know, being in the minor leagues and all that, do you ever interact like that with fans before games? Because it's probably a little bit looser.
You know, they have so many promotions on the field in the minor leagues where, you know, fans are on the field, but not out in the parking lot. I mean, there's all kinds of promotions that, you know, the fans come in and have clinics and different things, but nothing to that extent.
No, you know, walk around chatting people up.
No, not chatting with people. So, you know, I remember milking a cow in Clinton, Iowa on the field. Yeah, at home plate. Yeah, I mean, the crazy stuff they have you do.
Did you know how to do that?
No.
Dwayne's part of the show today. Dwayne, I'm sure, would win any milking contest.
Yeah, I bet he would. You know what? Maybe he ought to go out in the parking lot with Amy G and do a story, and he can bring everybody a Kringle, too, out there. That he will do, because he always brings it into the clubhouse, and it's fantastic, and we all look forward to it. But that might be a nice little segment for him.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Hitters like going to Milwaukee, don't they?
Absolutely. It's a great place to hit. Well, it's a controlled environment. You know, when the roof is closed, it's small. And as you said, the Super Bowls are flying out of the park. So it's going to be even easier to reach the seats in Milwaukee.
They got that guy, Bernie Brewer. He slides down.
Yeah, he slides down in a home run. He had to get three new pair of pants this year because he keeps wearing them out.
Very good, Wolf. Very good. All right, on a Sunday morning. Very good. I know the All-Star break is coming. You can feel it. I can see it in your face. I can see it already.
Well, let's win this one today. And, you know, we've been on a good run. So it'd be great to recharge our batteries. And I know... you know, everybody always looks forward to the time off. It's such a grind. So it'll be good, you know. And, you know, fortunate for us, we don't have that many guys banged up, you know, which is good. You know, we knock on wood here. We've been in good stead that way, thanks to Gresh and his staff. And, so let's keep that going.
All right. Home run derby. Who do you like?
You know, I'd have to get analytical on this if I was really going to do it. I mean, I, you know, all the players' names on here look good. Bell, Yelich, Alonso, Guerrero, Peterson, Santana, Okuna, you know, Bregman. I'm surprised Bregman's on there. He's got more of a, you know, a flatter swing. So, you know, it'd surprise me if he won. You know, I really want to know the launch angle on these swings because that's where it really comes into play is on the home run derby, a guy that's got that home run stroke in BP. And looking at this, you know, I'd say Alonso or Guerrero, from what I've seen out of their swings, You know, even Yelich got a little more of a you know, a flatter swing. I don't know what his launch angle is, but if you looked at all those numbers, I think that would give you an edge. But then it boils down to who's going to square it up, and you can't discount experience and somebody that's been through it before, because you know it may be one thing doing it in BP during batting practice, but doing it on national TV when it's a competition. There's a little more anxiety, and it becomes a little more difficult.
And you can win $1 million.
And you can win $1 million. And the last part of this, what I'd want to know, if I was betting on it, which I'm not, and I can't do, is who their BP pitcher is. How many of these guys are bringing in their own BP pitcher?
They all are.
They all are. Yeah. Well, there you go. Okay, so that shouldn't be an issue.
You ever throw BP?
Oh, yeah, for a lot of years. I haven't thrown in about 4 or 5 years with the arm surgeries, but I threw every day, every group, and then in the minor leagues, I threw every day. Yep.
Boy, and you had to put the ball in a certain spot. That's the deal for these guys. You know, they want it in a certain spot.
Yeah.
They asked Vladimir Guerrero Jr., where do you want it? He says, middle, media.
Well, there you go. Who doesn't like it middle? But, you know, it's true. There's a lot of guys, you know, throw better BP than other guys, you know, how firm it is and your location. You know, you want to throw it where the guys want the ball. You want to be able to throw in and out. So it's a big deal. Good BP pitcher goes a long way, and we've had one of the best here in Cutter John, or Strike Force, as his name has been changed to John Yandel, the great John Yandel.
Yeah, we had him on the show. Loved learning about him.
Yeah.
He's terrific. Carmen, well, first I'm picking Josh Bell, just so I'm on the record.
Are you? Okay. Yeah. Well, he's having a heck of a year.
Yeah, come on. He hit it into the Allegheny a few times already.
Yeah. No, well, he's at the top of the list here, 3-1 odds, I guess.
Yeah. It's like a horse race. I'm taking Josh Bell. All right, Carmen, you got a question for Will?
Yeah, so I noticed that when Austin Slater ran around the bases during his Grand Slam, he was very excited. He was super stoked. And I was wondering, when they round the base and they give you that high five or whatever they do coming around, who's the person who's almost taken your hand off? Who's somebody who's really, you know, hurt you a little bit?
Yeah, I know. That's a great question, Carmen, because I'm glad you noticed, because I noticed. And, well, Slater was real jacked up yesterday when he hit the Grand Slam. I saw it coming. I could see it in his eyes, and he whacked me pretty good on the hand, but, you know, you got to learn to give with it. So, you know, I hope they don't whiff one of these days. The guy's going to come around all jacked up. And I go with a lot of low fives, and the reason is the two guys really got me. Well, Nick Hundley used to get me really, really good, and, you know, I finally told him, Nick, you hit me like that again, I'm going to hit you right back. Because, you know, you're talking about shoulders, and that's why I don't do the high five. The guy that actually injured my shoulder in a high five was your buddy, Hunter Pence, and it was in Oakland. He hit a three-run homer in the seventh inning a few years ago, to give us the lead. And now in Oakland, the bench is a long way from home plate, so you got about 5 seconds there to calm down a little bit. Not Hunter. He came in, and in the dugout, right before he stepped in, I gave him a high five, and he blew out my rotator cuff. He hit me so hard.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's
all right,
a strong
guy.
I can
believe it.
Yeah, so you got to be careful. Low fives for all those coaches out there that don't want to hurt themselves. Low fives.
Today is Carmen Puppy Day. What, Dog Day?
Dog Day. The best day ever.
Bruce Jenkins wrote a beautiful story about Mike Kruko and, of course, the challenges he faces, and he's got the service dog Patriot. You've seen Patriot.
Yeah. Great. You know what? Those service dogs are smart. They're great, great companions. I mean, people that I've known over the years that have them, they just, you know, it's like their best friend, these dogs. And I've seen them. I haven't spent much time with Patriot. There's Eddie Montague, who I called him this morning to clarify something. What a great umpire he was. But, yeah, no, it's a great deal, and the Dog Day is a nice event they have here at the ballpark. Everybody looks forward to it.
You guys have a dog?
No, we don't. We, the way we live, I mean, it's tough enough, you know, being apart, and it's more about logistics of who's going to watch the dog. But we plan on getting one when I'm done with this grind of, you know, coaching.
Yeah.
We plan on getting a dog, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good day at the park. Carmen, it's a big day, right?
Yeah.
You've got puppies coming.
I've got puppies coming. I'm so excited about that.
Cole Kuiper's bringing puppies.
Yeah, he works at ARF.
He's giving them away, is that it?
No. He's not giving them away. I wish he was. But one of the puppies is the one I think Alex is trying to adopt. So they're little guys that are the size of a hamster is what I've heard.
Really?
They're pretty small.
What kind of dogs?
Their mom, I think, was a Chihuahua. Chihuahua mix, and maybe it's like a terrier type of situation too.
Watch out, watch your ankles.
The nip? Yeah. Okay, I'll be careful. I think I'll be all right.
Another day at the ballpark. Who knows what's going to happen? Well, appreciate you being on, of course, and have a great break, and we'll see you after Milwaukee. But, you know, there's one other thing we got to talk about, and it's that time of year. The weather is great. I love going over to River Islands, riverislands.com, and you and I have been out there. And I just have this image of River Islands, of being the kayaking, and just you walk out your front door and you have everything in front of you, and it's the gateway to things in Northern California. I love it.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. And, you know, thinking about the All-Star break right now, you know, we're going up to Napa to get away, but at River Islands, you got everything you want right there. It's, you know, it's a vacation at home. You know, all the waterways, you know, the soccer fields, baseball fields, beach volleyball, great, or sand volleyball, I should say, that great restaurant that they have there, and there's a lot going on, the movie nights that they have in the summer, the farmer's market, the list goes on and on, all within walking distance, and not a lot of communities have that. So,
and it is a community, and that's what I love about it. It's a community, it's got all sorts of cross-section of people, different economic levels, different people doing things, children, without children. It appeals to everybody, and it really is. In the crazy world we live in today of real estate, River Islands is a very special place just east of Tracy.
Yeah, and I'm going to go up there this winter again when
I'll
the season's over.
We'll go up
and check in. I'm anxious to see, you know, how the community's growing because they have big plans, yeah. And there's a lot more plans in the works for this town and community to continue to grow. So,
look
forward to that.
All right, very good. RiverIslands.com. All right, well, have a great vacation, and I'll talk to you either from Milwaukee or when you guys come back.
Okay. Well, it was great being with you guys in this first half. And everybody rest up, and we'll see you in the second half.
And who knows where it's all going to go. It's going to be fun.
It is going to be fun.
I will guarantee you this. It's going to be a story.
Yeah.
We're in for a story. Yeah, I will tell you that.
And you're the one that will tell it.
Apparently. Yeah. That's true. All right. More coming up right here, the Sports Leader.